Okay. Morning, everyone. It's Parshas Pekudei. We're in the middle of the four special Parshas, but this Shabbos is a break. It's called Hafsaka. We have a break between Shkalim and Zohar. However, it's still a very special Shabbos because it's the first Shabbos and the second Adar. It also is known as Shabbos Chazak. Shabbos Chazak is the Shabbos where we finish now the second Chumash of the Torah, Chumash Shmos, and it's known as Shabbos Chazak, Shabbos of Strength. As someone mentioned, we daven for strength right now, and hopefully Hashem will only send good brachas. So. But then it's Parshas Pekudei. Parshas Pekudei is really an audit. It's the conclusion of five Parshias that deal with the building of the Mishkan. We have Truma, Tetzaveh, and half of Kisisa dealing with Hashem's command to build the Mishkan. Vayakel is when Moshe Rabbeinu, this last week's Parsha, when Moshe Rabbeinu gathers Kol Yisrael and tells them the instructions of Hashem and how they got to work, and they donated. Material and resources to build the Beis HaMikdash, and Pekudei, Eile Pekudei. First of all, Moshe Rabbeinu does an audit of all the materials that came in, and also we learn how Bezalel and Aholiyah, as we'll soon learn, put everything in place as Hashem had commanded. So let's just learn the first couple of psukim. I'm going to share the screen. Give me 1 second here. Okay, so number one over there. Okay. Says the Chumash, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan. These are the reckonings, the audit of the Mishkan, known as Mishkan HaEdus, the Mishkan of testimony. In other words, it was a place that testified and attested to the presence of Hashem. Asher Pukar Al Pi Moshe, which was administered and counted through Moshe Rabbeinu. Avoidas halavim, including the avoida, the service, the duties of the levim, which was under the jurisdiction, under the leadership, Yad Isomar, it was led by Isomar ben Aaron HaKohen, who was the son of Aaron the Kohen. Now, who was the project manager of the Mishkan? As we know, who was the designer and the project manager? Says the Pasuk, the next Pasuk, Pasuk HaBeis, Ubetzalel ben Uri ben Chur, Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Chur, Lemata Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda. Also, he did a kol asher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Everything that Hashem had commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Now, Bezalel wasn't the only one. Bezalel had a partner. Who was the partner? It says the next pasuk. V'itoy, and with him, Oholiyav ben Achisamach. Oholiyav, the son of Achisamach, Lamatei Don, that came from the tribe of Don. Chorosh v'choyshe v'roikim, he was a designer, he could build and he could do, he was a craftsman, Batcheles, v'argomon, with wool, blue wool, like purple wool, slashoni, red wool, bashesh, and linen. He used all those materials together with Bezalel. So the project managers of the Mishkan was Bezalel and Oholiyav. Now, just by the way, just bear in mind, because we're going to come back to it in a minute. In the middle pasuk over there, we have the expression asher tziva Hashem es Moshe, as Hashem had commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. That phrase asher tziva Hashem es Moshe comes up many times in this parasha, because everything that we learn that they did, they built the Oren, they put the Oren in the Mishkan, they built the beams, every item that it discusses in the parasha that was carried out to build and construct the Mishkan, it always ends off, every paragraph ends off, Kasher Tziva Hashem is Moshe, as Hashem commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, they did everything according to the way they were commanded. Okay. We'll see what the significance of that is in a second. Just have a look at the Rashi in number two. Rashi says, HaMishkan, Mishkan, if you look at the first pasuk, it says, this is an audit of the Mishkan, which was called Mishkan HaEdus. So we have the word Mishkan twice. Says Rashi, Shnei Pa'amim, the Mishkan is mentioned twice. Remez LeMishkan, this hints to the Mishkan, Remez LeMikdash, this is an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash. two Beis HaMikdash, in other words, the first and the second, that's the double expression, Mishkan, Mishkan. Why would the Beis HaMikdash be referred to as a Mishkan? Because the word Mishkan has another meaning. Mishkan can mean a sanctuary, but Mishkan can also mean Shenismashkein, it was taken as a collateral. Hashem sort of is holding the Mishkan. Right? B'shnei chubarnim alav v'risein shel Yisrael. Because we sinned in both Batei Mikdash, so the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, but as we know, it wasn't only destroyed, it still exists, at least on a spiritual level, and therefore Hashem is, so to speak, holding it. He's going to give it back when we do the right thing. He's holding it as a collateral, he's holding it as a guarantee, and when we do the right thing, he brings them back, so to speak, and they merge into the third Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so that's the first two concepts. Now, what I want to do today is just share with you three ideas. One is a short idea on what we just learned, that everything was done Asher Tziva Hashem as Moshe. Then I'm going to share with you a second idea based on, not completely, but based on the Shvilei Pinchas, as I often quote, and I'm going to connect it to Purim a little bit, hopefully. And then if we have time, I will just share with you something general about the Beis HaMikdash based on a Zohar, as is explained by the Lubavitcher Rebbe in one of his talks. Okay. So, if you have a look, as I said, in that middle pasuk, we have the expression Asher Tziva Hashem as Moshe. Now, the Yerushalmi says, right, that the Talmud Yerushalmi, that's the Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, says that the Shmona Esra that we have, we daven the Amidah every day, the Amidah is called Shmona Esra, right? Why is it called Shmona Esra? Shmona Esra means 18, because originally, when it was instituted with 18 brachas, 18 blessings, right? Okay, there was one more added later, okay, 19, but it's 18. Okay. Says the Yerushalmi that in our parsha, it says the word Ka'asher Tziva Hashem is Moshe, as Hashem had commanded Moshe, 18 times, right? Now, it's actually not 18 times, it's actually 19 times, but why does it say 18 times? Says the Yerushalmi, we're only counting the phrase Ka'asher Tziva Hashem is Moshe after Bezalel's partner gets introduced, which is Es'oliyav. Right? So if you see the first three psukim of the Pasha, already in the second pasuk it says Asher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, we don't count that. We're only counting the ones that come after Pasuk Chav Gimel, after Oholiyav ben Achisomach has been introduced as Bezalel's partner, all the subsequent Asher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, which is mentioned in the Pasha, which total 18, that's what we count, and that's why there's a Shmona Esra, because the Shmona Esra corresponds to the 18, the 18 brachas of the Shmona Esra correspond to the 18 times after Aliyah is introduced, where it says Asher Tziva Hashem is Moshe. Okay. The obvious question is, why only after Aliyah is introduced? What happened to the first Asher Tziva Hashem is Moshe? Number one. Number two, what's the connection between the 18 brachas of Shmona Esra and the 18 things it says in the Mishkan? What's the connection? It's a nice number, but what's the intrinsic connection? Okay. Generally, what's the connection between Tefillah and Mishkan? So we know the famous idea that when we daven, it's like bringing korbanos, bringing sacrifices, right? Why? Because there actually is a very, very strong connection between davening and between davening and the Mishkan. What is davening? So it says in many Sfarim, because the Zohar says, I think we mentioned this before, the Zohar says that Torah, when you learn Torah, it's menucha, it's peaceful. When you daven, daven is a time of struggle. Why is daven a struggle? Because we say like this, we say that davening, we know we each have two souls, two neshamas, the nefesh al akis, the nefesh al bamis, the godly soul and the animal soul, right? Torah is food for the soul, food for the godly soul. Torah is filling the godly soul with Torah, with Hashem's insights, with Hashem's wisdom. That's why there's no resistance, because the neshama wants to learn. The neshama is fed by the Torah that we learn. Davening, on the other hand, we are told, davening is an emotional experience. Because we learn in the Gemara that how do we know davening? We know it because it says, "Ol avdei b'chol levavchem," you should serve Hashem with all your heart. Eza avodah shebalev. What's a heart service? Says the Gemara, that's davening. Davening is about an emotional connection with Hashem. It's an emotional bond with Hashem. The part of us that is mainly, primarily emotional is the animal soul. The animal soul is the emotional side of us, which is why it needs to be refined and channeled, otherwise it becomes aggressive and worldly and mundane and so on. And davening is actually more about, not so much about talking to the soul. Davening is actually using the soul to refine the nefesh habamish, to refine the animal soul, to refine the emotional part of who we are, right? That's why the Zohar says the time of davening is the time of war, because there's resistance. The animal soul doesn't love Hashem naturally. The animal soul loves other things. That's why it's a struggle. Davening is a struggle because we've got to work with the nefesh habamish, we've got to work with the animal soul. So the idea of davening is to refine and to elevate things which are more mundane, things which are more connected to the physicality of the world, which is exactly the same as the Mishkan, right? The idea of the Mishkan was to elevate the physical world. What was the Mishkan? It was about taking physical things, gold, silver, copper, even copper, which is a less refined, a less expensive, a less quality material, and all the other things, to make a Mishkan for Hashem, to bring karbonos, to take animals and elevate them. In other words, it's all about elevating the physical world, right? In fact, you know, it's interesting. Well, I mean, this is more connected to next week's parasha, Vayikra, but when they brought a carbon on the Mizbeach, the carbon had a representative of each part of the world. You know, the world has four parts: doimem, tzomea, chayim, adarba, the inanimate, the things that grow, the animal kingdom, the human being. Every carbon had the same thing. Every carbon had the human being standing next to it. That was the carbon was being brought on his behalf or her behalf, and they would be there. And had the animal, which was in the animal kingdom, and had things that come from in the growing, which is every carbon had to come with either some wine or flour, whatever the case is, that's from things that grow. And then every carbon had to have salt, which is from the mineral world, the idea of doimem. So therefore, every carbon had part of the whole world in it, because that's the idea of the carbon, to elevate the physical world. That's why davening is very connected to the idea of the Mishkan. But when we say that we make 18 brachas of Shemoneh Esrei corresponding to the times that it says in this parasha, Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe, that's only after Aholiyah is introduced. Because one of the more famous ideas about who project managed the Mishkan is this: Bezalel and Aholiyah. But Bezalel and Aholiyah were very different. Bezalel came from a very, very important family. Came from Hur. Hur was the son of Miriam, right? Grandson of Amram, very choshev mishpacha. Also, Bezalel generally was from the tribe of Yehuda, right? Yehuda was from the leadership tribes of Klal Yisrael. David HaMelech comes from the tribe of Yehuda. So Bezalel was leading the project, managing the Mishkan. Bezalel represented the holier and loftier and more important, so to speak, parts of the makeup of Klal Yisrael. And Aholiyah ben Achisamach was that opposite. He came on one from the tribe of Don. He didn't come from any specific family. He also came from the tribe of Don. Don, we know that when the Jews traveled in the Midbar, Yehuda, according to a lot of opinions, they traveled in a straight line. Right? They camped in a square, but they traveled in a straight line, according to many opinions. Yehuda was the tribe that went first. Don was the tribe that went last. Right? They were the ones that used to pick up lost articles, that people dropped things and they didn't pick them up. When they traveled, Don would pick them up and return them. But not only were they lost physically, it also represented that they were lost spiritually. And yet together they built the Mishkan, which has a general famous vart around this, that to build a Mishkan, you don't have to be choshev. Everyone can build a Mishkan. Means both, if you're Bezalel, if you're a very, very important person, a very high madrega, you still need to build a Mishkan. And if you're a very low madrega, like Aholiyah ben Achisamach, you still can build a Mishkan. So that's that, right? But also the idea of tefillah, which is to elevate the lower parts of existence, the more physical, low parts of our own existence. That's why the real concept of tefillah only starts after Aholiyah ben Achisamach is introduced. That's why we only count the times that says Asher Tziva Hashem es Moshe after Aholiyah is introduced. That happens to be 18 times. Corresponding to that, Chazal Anshek Nesas HaGadolah made the brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. Okay. Just a nice idea. Now, I'm going to learn with you a Rashi, and I'm going to share this idea from Shmuel Pinchas. It says in the Pasuk that Bezalel did what Hashem had commanded Moshe. There's a background story to that expression over here. Bezalel didn't do, it doesn't say he did what Moshe Rabbeinu told him to do. It says Bezalel did what Hashem had commanded Moshe. So we have it like this. Now have a look in the Rashi. Number 3 on the handout. Ubetzalel, let's learn through this Rashi together. Ubetzalel ben Uri v'goymer, Bezalel, etc. Also, he did everything, k'chol, asher tziva Hashem as Moshe. Everything that Hashem had commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. Says Rashi, asher tziva Moshe ein ksiv kani. It didn't say he did everything that Moshe Rabbeinu told him to do. Ella rather, kol asher tziva Hashem as Moshe. He did everything that Hashem had commanded Moshe. Which means, says Rashi, a fascinating thing. Afilu dvarim shali omar loy rabbi. He said even things that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't tell him. Why? He skimmed daitel mashal Moshe Misinai, but he managed to realize what Hashem had actually told Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. What happened? What's the background to this? Says Rashi in the third line. Moshe tziva lebetzalel. Moshe Rabbeinu commanded Betzalel. Laso is tchilo kelim ve'achakach mishkan. When you build the Mishkan has two parts to it. Part of it is the vessels, the holy vessels, the ark, the candelabra, the basin, the mizbeach, and so on. And then there's the structure, the walls, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu told Betzalel, when you build the Mishkan, make the kelim first, make the shulchan, the table, and the menorah, and the oren, and everything first. And then build the walls, then build the structure. Right? Omar, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu told Bezalel. Omar loy Bezalel, so Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Minag, it's a custom, Minag Olam, the way of the world is, not like that, right? Lasso is tchila bayis, you make a house first. V'achakach meisim kelim b'soichoi. And then you put furniture. You don't put furniture without the house. Omar lei. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, you're right. Kach shomaiti pi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Actually, that's why I heard it from Hashem. Omar lei Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, Betzel, that's why your name is Betzalel. Because Betzel, Keil, Hoyiso, you were in the shadow of God. Kibavadai kach tzivu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's taka mamash what Hashem told me. And that's why, v'chein osa, that's exactly what Betzalel did. Osa ha-mishkan tchila, he made the mishkan, the structure first, and then he made the kelim, and then he made the vessels. That's why in the first pasuk it says, it doesn't say that Bezalel did everything that Hashem, that Moshe Rabbeinu told him to do, but he says he did everything that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to do. Okay. The Gemara, by the way, brings a similar story. The Gemara adds in a sentence that Bezalel turned to Moshe Rabbeinu and says, first of all, that's not the way of the world. First you build a house, then you put in furniture. And secondly, an additional thing he had, which Rashi doesn't bring here, he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, if I build the kelim first, if I build the mizbech, the shulchan, everything first, where am I going to put them? Where am I going to put them? I need a house. I need a structure first. Okay. So there's many, many questions on the story. First of all, the obvious question is, if Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the structure and then the furniture, why didn't he tell it that way to Bezalel? Should have told Bezalel that exact thing. Right. Second of all, the Gemara ways of saying it, right? Where Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, if I make the kelim first, where am I going to put them? That's a strange question. Where are we going to put them? We know in the Midbar there was a very, very carefully worked out system of how to protect the vessels when they're not in the structure. When? Don't forget that in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, the Mishkan wasn't standing all the time. They dismantled the Mishkan every time they had to travel. And when they traveled, they dismantled the whole thing. And the Kalim were left vulnerable. The Shulchan, the Ora, and the Ark were left vulnerable. So they had a whole system of putting them on wagons and covering them with certain covers and so on and so forth, which would protect them while they traveled until they came back and they built the structure again, right? So he says, so then he asks the question, what do you mean? But Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, if I build the kelim first, where am I going to put them? You'll cover them, you'll protect them, like we're going to do the whole 40 years in the desert. So what kind of complaint was that? Thirdly, we have to understand what's the significance of this debate. What can we learn from it, right? So one of the ways to understand it is as following, a very important lesson. The Mishnah says, when you're going to do two activities and the one is holier than the other, the holier one comes first. Right? Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu figured, in practice, you need to build the Mishkan first. You need to build the Kelim first. The Kelim, the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, of the Mishkan, were holier than the structure of the Mishkan. I mean, let's take, for example, the Oren, the Ark. The Ark was a place from which Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. He stood there, he heard a voice of Hashem. The Mizbeach HaKatoiris, the Oren, I mean, these are very, very holy vessels. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu felt, everything that is holier than his friend, then other thing comes first. So therefore he says, you should do it, right? Not only that, Moshe Rabbeinu knew, the Rambam tells us, what's the point of the Mishkan? The Rambam says the point of the Mishkan is to have a place where you can serve Hashem, like you can bring korbanos, where you can light the menorah, where you can do the ketores and so on. In other words, the purpose of the Mishkan are the kelim. You need to be able to serve Hashem using those kelim. Therefore, it's much more important than holier, and therefore should be done first. Okay. Bezalel argued, and actually he came out to what Hashem had originally said. Which again is strange. If Hashem really said that, then why Moshe Rabbeinu change it? Right? And Bezalel insisted, all good, they must be holier, they're the purpose, all good and fine, but we are going to build the structure first. Why? So in the Shvile Pinchas, he brings the following idea, something connected to what we explained a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago, we explained that the Briah Chaticho in the middle bolt that held together the Mishkan was connected to Yaakov Avinu, and we explained the whole thing, how that was connected to the stick of Yaakov afterwards, and so on and so forth, right? But as we know, as we said then, it wasn't just the bolt, the middle bolt, that was connected to Yaakov Avinu. The entire structure was, the entire beams and everything were connected to Moshe Rabbeinu. As the famous Medrash goes, that what is the, where did they get cedar wood for, where did they get acacia wood, these wood from these various trees, where did they get them? In the Midbar, in the desert, there's a place that doesn't sell these things. So it goes back to the whole story. I mean, a desert doesn't grow trees, doesn't grow, right? So it goes back to the whole story that we talked about a few weeks ago, the symbol of hope that Yaakov Avinu was able to implement, that it says that when Yaakov Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, he knew that eventually the Yidden are going to have to come up. He knew that eventually they're going to have to build a Mishkan. So not to Arazim, he planted cedar trees, he planted these trees, there should be wood. And he told them to take it out with them because they're going to need it. Okay, so last time we spoke a whole idea that's got to do with the hope and emunah and bitachon. We take a different track today. A different track like this. Brings Moshe, Yaakov Avinu, not only was a tzaddik, right? But he excelled in something else. And we see it. We see a theme develop by Yaakov in it. The point of the concept is this. The kelim of the Beis HaMikdash, the kelim of the Mishkan, the Menorah, the Ora, and the Mizbech, and so on, they all are very holy things. And they represent the way a Yid serves Hashem. So for example, the Ora wasn't only what they were doing then. The Ora generally represents the Avodas Hashem. The Ora represents learning Torah, for example, being connected to Hashem. In fact, the idea of the Ora and the idea of the Kruvim, the idea of the Ora being, even the size of the Ora, which we know it was half Amos, it wasn't complete, it was half Amos. The Mefarshim tell us it's got to do with the humility, when we learn Torah, we learn with humility, right? Lighting the menorah has to do with learning Torah also, connecting to the mitzvahs, different kinds of mitzvahs. Neir mitzvah, it says in Tanakh, every mitzvah is like a candle of a Torah or, and the Torah is like light. So the idea of combining Torah and mitzvahs. The shulchan, even with the showbread, was, that's got to do with physical sustenance. Farshim explained that's got to do also with the idea of Yisachar and Zevulun. So that's one way of serving Hashem, to give tzedakah, to support those that learn Torah. That's the shulchan. So every bit of the kelim of the Mishkan represent the Avodas Hashem. However, to be successful in serving Hashem is a prerequisite. And the prerequisite is spiritual protection from the distortions of the world, from the threatening beliefs of the world around us. In other words, it is not enough to say I'm going to be committed to serving Hashem. It's not enough to say I'm going to be engaged even in the Oroin, in the sukkah and the lulav and so on. That's not enough. A person must be ready to detach a little bit, to be protected from the evils of the world around us, to keep out the influences that come from worldly perspectives. We need like a mechitza, a break between us and the rest of the world, which we say every Friday, Motzei Shabbos and Avdolah. Hamavdil, Hashem separates different things. One of the things he separates Yisrael and Ben Amim. He separates the Jewish people from other nations of the world. We have this idea of Veniflinu. When the Yidro and Mitzrayim raided, there was a marked difference. They didn't get the plagues, and so on and so forth. But why is that so important? It's important because otherwise we could assimilate and mingle and become too ingrained in the world around us and adopt some of the terrible, distorted values and threatening influences that come from the world, right? We know this is symbolic of a mitzvah we have today called the mezuzah. Because we have walls, we have a home. Home represents protection. The home is insular, home is a place where we protect ourselves. But we also have a door, and the door can let in things that we shouldn't let in. Spiritually speaking, it could let in types of material, the types of perspectives that we don't want. That's why we put a mezuzah. The mezuzah is to protect Am Yisrael, to protect the home from those influences that come in. This is particularly true when we learn Torah. Because Torah can be the catalyst for great connection with Hashem, but Torah can also be the source of arrogance, the source of going off the track, the source of I know better, right? So Torah needs protection. This is what Bezalel was worried about. See, that protection must come before we engage in mitzvahs. And this explains that the conversation, we'll get back to Yaakov in a minute. This is the conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu and Bezalel. Moshe Rabbeinu comes and says, you should make the kelim first. Make the kelim first. Why? Because the purpose of the Mishkan is not the walls. The purpose of the Mishkan is enhancement of serving Hashem. You've got to serve Hashem properly. That's the kelim. That's where you bring a korban, you offer up incense, you go to the Orah and the Torah and so on. The kelim are the vessels through which we serve Hashem, through which we connect to Hashem. So Bezalel turns around, he says, yes, Moshe Rabbeinu, but that's not going to work unless the Yidden are protected. It's very nice to have a menorah, it's very nice to have an Oren, whatever that means symbolically. But it's dangerous because people get swept up and assimilated within the perspectives and the attitudes of the worlds around us. And before they can engage in Kelim, before they can engage in real serious service for Hashem, they need to be protected. And this is what he means, this is what the Yerushalmi means, that Bezalel said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kelim shani oise leheichanak nisam. The kelim that I'm going to make in this Mishkan, where must I put them? He didn't mean where must I put them. He had a way of putting them. He said, where will they be effective? Where should they be placed if there's no protection from the rest of the world? They're not going to work, these mitzvahs. Right? That's what Bezalel was saying. Now, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, out of the three, Yaakov, on the one hand, was the most, had this idea of protection in a most emphasized way. Why? First of all, we know that Yaakov Avinu obviously had a certain additional level of spiritual protection because, unlike Avraham and Yitzchak, who, for whatever reason, foreign values crept into the house, and that's why it says, Mishmoel went off the derech, so to speak, and was not part of Klal Yisrael. Yitzchak had two sons, Yaakov and Esav. Esav went a different path. However, when it comes to Yaakov, we learn mitosa yishleima. His bet is complete, which means all his children were tzaddikim, all were righteous. Now, what does that mean? So this is the idea that Yaakov Avinu, we find this twice. This is the idea that Yaakov Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim, and on the way, he plants these trees. He doesn't provide the material for the rest of the Mishkan, he only provides the material for the walls. And he told his children, when you go out of Mitzrayim, take them with you. In other words, you're going to go out into the big world, you're going to go out into a place which is dangerous. and you need to protect yourself. I've planted the trees, take the trees so you can build the structure. You can build the walls, you can build the beams around the Mishkan. That represents the protection from the outside world. That's the one time we find this by Yaakov Avinu. However, we find it a second time. It's an idea of protection. And that second time I'm going to share with you because it's very relevant to how we engage with the world in general. Because here we're talking about almost shutting ourselves out of the world or detaching or protecting ourselves from the world. But we also know, we've said this 100 times, 1,000 times, that part of our mission is to engage with the world, right? Part of our mission is not to leave the world behind. Yiddishkeit is about bringing Hashem into the world, not abstaining from the world, not detaching from the world. So which is it? Is it protecting ourselves from the world or is it engaging with the world? And the answer is that it's both. Let me give you this introduction, then we'll explain another story about Yaakov Avinu. Our job is to, this is a big mistake people make. Our job is to make this world Hashem's garden. Our job is to bring Elokus, godliness, into the world. But you can only do that and not get messed up in the process if on another level you detach from the world, you protect it. Understand? In other words, when we approach the world, our initial engagement with the world has to be that we are not happy to engage with the world, and nor do we view the world as a great place. The world is not a great place. The world is called in Hebrew, Olam. Olam comes from the word la'alim, to hide. The definition of a world is that it's a place that hides the true presence of Hashem. Right? So therefore, our initial approach to the world is arm's distance. We need to not be so involved in the world. Because the world is a place of klippa. It's a place of spiritual destruction. Especially nowadays. Space of terrible values. Why is that so important initially? Specifically because our job is to go and engage with the world. That's why we engage with the world, but always we have a wall up. We have a separation. Okay? We find even halachically there are many mitzvahs that are designed that way. We're not supposed to bring wine. That's from non-Jews. We're not supposed to drink wine with non-Jews, even it says in halacha. Right? Although there's different exceptions to that. Because we're supposed to interact with people. We're supposed to interact with the rest of the world. That's why we always have to have the reminder to keep a barrier. What is it to keep a barrier? Otherwise, we don't bring Hashem into the world, we just become worldly. And that's the opposite of what's supposed to happen. Where do we find this idea by Yaakov Avinu? So we know that at the end of Yaakov Avinu's stay at Lavan, right? So he runs away, takes his two wives, his four wives, his 12 children, his 13 children, he runs. Lavan gets wind of it. Lavan was furious, and he pursues him, and he catches up with him. And he's on the way, and he's about to catch up with him the next morning, but it's nighttime, he cannot travel anymore, so Lavan lies down to sleep, and has a dream, and in the dream Hashem appears to him. And Hashem warns him, that don't touch Yaakov. Make sure. Protect Yaakov. And Hashem says to him, don't go to him and don't speak to him. And don't speak to him. Don't speak to him. Good things, bad things. Whatever you do is going to mess up. So they match up. And Lavan sees he cannot harm Yaakov. So he comes to Yaakov and he says, okay, let us at least make a covenant between us. A pact, a promise. It won't hurt each other and so on and so forth. So what is Yaakov going to do? It's Parshas Vayeshev, I think. No, not Vayeshev, sorry. Parshas Vayetze. Right? Parshas Vayetze, sorry. So Yaakov tells his people with him, go and collect stones and they erect this, what we call Galed, or Yigar Sadusa, as it says in Aramaic. But it's a monument of stones. What was the monument of stone supposed to be there? It's a very interesting, fascinating thing. It's supposed to serve as a separation between Yaakov and Lavan. Lavan represents the world, the arrogance of the world, the dishonesty of the world. That's what Lavan represents. Yaakov represents the Jewish people. Yaakov says, you want to make a covenant? We can make a covenant. We can interact and we can care for each other, but we can't come too close. There needs to be a barrier. Let's put up a pound of stones, a mound of stones. Stones like a barrier. And you won't pass over to do any bad for us. And Rashi over there says in Parashat Vayetze, Rashi says That what it means is that the pact and the promise was you won't cross the border to do any harm, but you could cross the border to do business. How was that represented in this monument? Because the monument was a barrier of stones, but actually it wasn't a wall that you can't knock down. It was a mound of stones, but loose stones that you could actually remove it, right? And it's explained as far as this is exactly our relationship with the world. We have to have a barrier that protects us from the spiritual destruction of the world. But it's a barrier that it's a barrier that's there always to remind us of that separation, that detachment we need from the world. But it's a mound of stones that you can move. Because we can't cross it to do business, the real business, which is to bring Hashem into the world. So there's a wall, but there's not a wall. Yaakov Avinu was very good at this. Yaakov Avinu was excellent at this separation, at this barrier, at this protection. That's why Yaakov Avinu told the Jewish people to bring up cedar woods, because that would be the protection for them during the Midbar, spiritual protection. That's why Yaakov Avinu had 12 children that were all tzaddikim, right? Not like Esau or like Ishmael. Says Bezalel to Moshe Rabbeinu, how can I build the kelim first? The kelim represent what you do to serve Hashem. But if you're doing what Hashem wants you to do, which is to do Yiddishkeit, to spread Yiddishkeit, to talk to people and so on and so forth, and to engage with the world, but there's no protection, there's no Yaakov Avinu, we're in trouble. We have to learn from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu only built a home of Kulam Tzaddikim because he understood that barrier. So therefore he says, it's a problem. Kelim, if you're going to build the Kelim first, where am I going to put them? Where are they going to be protected? Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're right. We have to build the Mishkan first. So it's a very important thing, is because this is the foundation of how we serve Hashem. We all build our own Mishkan, and the Mishkan means that we have to build a Mishkan, we have to build a wall, a barrier, a psychological barrier at least, between us and the world, not to assimilate, not to give importance to the distorted values of the world, but to stay strong. But at the same time, to have a barrier that we can cross. Because we need to take Yiddishkeit to the world. Right? And that's the model we learned from Yaakov Avinu. And that's what Bezalel wanted to do. That's why you need to build the barrier first. Then we'll put the Kelim, then we'll put the holiness there. And it'll be protected holiness. Of course, talking about Purim, this is very much connected to the idea of Purim. Right? Purim, the Yidden were punished with that decree of Haman, partly because they broke down those barriers in a not good way, right? And this is what Chazal tell us, why were they deserving of such a terrible decree? Because Nehenu Misudosoi Shel Oisa Rasha, because they derived benefit from the banquet of that wicked person, the wicked Achashverosh. Right? What does it mean they broke down barriers? That's exactly what it means. They gave too much importance to the world. According to many, many Mepharshim, when the Yidden went to the banquet of Achashverosh, they didn't do any Averis. They didn't eat treif, nothing. It was all 100% kosher. But it was worldly. And it was giving chashivas, importance to the world, relying on the world. Hashem said, that's not good. Once that happens, you open yourself up to all sorts of spiritual dangers. And that's what we learned from Purim. That's why when it came, a famous idea, that's when I came to the miracle of Purim, or the strategy that Mordechai used to get the miracle of Purim, he told Esther to go to Achashverosh. And Esther says, I'm going to fast for 3 days. And Esther herself fasted for 3 days. Right? Now the whole idea was, it's a famous kasha, the whole idea was, Esther was going to go to Achashverosh after 3 days, and she's going to have to, she wasn't called, she wasn't given permission, and she hopes Achashverosh will welcome her. So the answer is, the worst thing to do is to fast for 3 days first. You're not going to look very good after you fast for 3 days. Right, you're trying to get Achashverosh to, you know, but the answer is not only that, she says, I'm not going unless you first go and gather all the Yidden in Shushan and fast and daven for me, etc., etc. So the explanation is a very simple one, that Esther knew that although we have to go through nature, we have to go and facilitate a process where we're trying to do our best within the nature of the world in terms of the brachas and Achashverosh and Haman and so on and so forth. But we know that it doesn't work unless there's a spiritual backing behind. Same idea. That was like a tikkun. It was like correcting what happened at the barrier. It happened at the banquet. At the banquet, the Yidden thought the only way to stay alive and to survive is connecting with the greatness of the politicians. So they got involved in the banquet. They got fully involved. They forgot that we don't work like that. The existence of Klal Yisrael doesn't happen up point in nature. It happens on a much higher level from Hashem. That's why when Mordechai had to go and fix this whole thing, he says, you got to fast, you got to daven, because that's the main part. And the second thing about Ahasuerus going to him, that's only the second part. Okay. That's why B'Tzalel said, we have to build the protection first, otherwise there won't be spiritual success in the Mishkan. And Hashem said, you're right. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. That's exactly what Hashem told me. I just mentioned doing it first because that was the holiest thing. And that was the goal of the Mishkan, to be able to serve Hashem. But Hashem did actually tell me to build the structure first because that's spiritual protection. Okay. I'm just going to end off with a thought. Coming from one of the talks that the Rebbe gave based on a Zohar, right? I'll just share with you the Zohar. If you ever look at the other side of your handout. Right. The Zohar is in this parsha, and it's talking about when the Mishkan was built, and how the Ark came to the Oren, and then eventually when the Ark was in Eretz Yisrael, had eventually made its way to the Beis HaMikdash. And it says three things there. One opinion is, now what happened was, before this little pasuk, have a look at your handout number 4. This is a capital Tilim Kuflam and Beis 132, where the Tilim is talking about Hashem's presence arriving at the Beis HaMikdash, and about the Beis HaMikdash being the chosen place for Hashem to rest. And it says there, Ki Bochar, it's Tilim 132, Pasuk Yedalit, Ki Bochar Hashem B'tzioi, Ivo L'moishav Loi, Hashem chose Tzion, which is Yerushalayim. He desired Tzion to be his seat. Then it says, Zois menuchosi ade ad. This is my resting place for all time. Poi eishev ki ivisiho. This is where I'm going to dwell. This is where I'm going to live because I desire it. Simple pshat, let's talk about Yerushalayim. Hashem says, or we'll see who says in a second, this is my resting place forever. Once it came to the Beis HaMikdash, it became permanent. There was no other place you could build the Beis HaMikdash anymore. This is my resting place for all time. This is where I'm going to dwell. This is what I want. And the Zohar brings three opinions about who said this pasuk. The first opinion the Zohar brings is that the Oroin, the Ark itself said it, so to speak. The Oroin, when it arrived in its place, when it arrived in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Oroin says, Zois munuchasi adiyah, this is my eternal resting place. Okay. Second opinion in the Zohar says, not only does it say it's not the Oroin, but it sort of makes another change and says, the Yidden said it, Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people said it, so to speak, when they built the base, when the Beis HaMikdash was built. When the Beis HaMikdash was built, they said it, and they said, Zois menachasi adiyat. Comes along the third opinion of the Zohar and says, no, Hashem says it. When does Hashem say it? So the third opinion doesn't say when the Beis HaMikdash was built. It says, the third, Hashem said it when the Beis HaMikdash was built, but only when the Yidden do the will of Hashem. When the Yidden do the will of Hashem, then there's a beauty in the world, and Hashem's presence in the world, and Hashem comes from His Kiseh HaKoveh, from His throne of glory, and Hashem proclaims, this is my resting place for all time. Hashem says it. Now, if you look at that Zohar, it's a difference of opinion, not only who said this pasuk, this is my resting place for all time, but also in what circumstance. The first is saying, just the Oren said it when it came. And the second one says, no, it was said by Knesset Yisrael when the Beis HaMikdash was built. In other words, emphasizing not just the Oren, but the bigger Beis HaMikdash. And the third opinion is Hashem says it, not just even the Beis HaMikdash, but when there's full compliance and the Yidden are doing everything that Hashem wants them to do. So it's a long idea, but I'm just going to share with you one insight over here. First of all, it has to do with the three objectives of the Mishkan. Because we find the machlokes between the Ramban and the Rambam about what the definition of the Beis HaMikdash was, and also the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash, right? So the Ramban says, the main thing in the Beis HaMikdash was the Oren. The main keli was the Oren, the Ark, because that was the most holy, that was the one that has the Hashem's presence, right? So that makes sense according to the first opinion of the Zohar. The Oren said, this is my resting place, because everything's about the Oren, everything's about the holiness of the Oren. The Rambam says no. That the main part of the Beis HaMikdash is to have a house to bring karbonis, to serve Hashem, to do the rituals that serve Hashem. That very much fits in with the second opinion of the Zohar, that it was said by the Yidden when the Beis HaMikdash came. In order to serve Hashem, an Oren is not enough. You have to have a Mizbeach, you have to have a Menorah, all these things that we need to serve Hashem. And the third aspect of the Beis HaMikdash is not the holiness of the Oren so much, and not the ability to serve Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash, but ultimately the whole purpose of the Beis HaMikdash is the Ashras HaShchinah, it's the presence of the Shechinah that rests in the whole world. And that ultimately will come and be perfected when Mashiach comes, when the Yidden are all doing the will of Hashem, and that's why the third opinion of the Zohar is, Hashem said it when the Yidden are doing His will. But just to break it down a little bit more than that, we have, give me 1 second here. We have three stages in Jewish history, so to speak, right? We have the Mishkan, when the Mishkan was built. Then we have the two Bate Mikdash. And then we have when Mashiach comes, the third Beis HaMikdash, which will be eternal. What's the difference? First Beis HaMikdash was really, sorry, the first stage, which is the Mishkan. Mishkan had no kedusha in the world. It just used to travel from place to place. The ground didn't even become holy, right? Because that's the Mishkan is temporary. So what was there about the Beis HaMikdash? Just the holiness that was there around the vessels, the Mikdash, particularly the Oren. Then came the first and second Beis HaMikdash, which was much more permanent. And that already brought holiness into the objects of the world. The Kalim, the ground became Kodesh. But nevertheless, the second Beis HaMikdash and the first Beis HaMikdash were also temporary. They were destroyed. And then you have the Zman of the Beis HaMikdash, HaShlishi, the third Beis HaMikdash, where the Shekhinah is eternal and Hashem's presence can never go away. This also fits into these three opinions of the Zohar. The first one is about the Mishkan, which is more about the vessels, that's the Oren. The second one is more about the Yidden being able to serve Hashem. And the third one is about the Shekhinah being completely present in the world, which will happen mainly when Mashiach comes. And he ends off with, then he says, this also got to do with the three phases of how a person has to serve Hashem. We have like this. We have the first thing a person has to do is Torah. Our frame of reference is learning Torah. We have to learn Torah, be guided by Torah, and transport ourselves into a new reality, which is the reality of Torah, where we detach from the world and we're all just immersed in Hashem's wisdom. That's the first opinion of the Zohar. That the Oren is the one that said, this is my resting place, because that's the first thing that a Jew has to do, immerse himself in learning Torah. However, the second stage is that Torah cannot just be Torah. Torah is only a true Torah if it leads to the mitzvahs. It has to translate into action. In other words, there has to be a Beis HaMikdash. There has to be a place where you light the menorah, where you bring karbonis, where you do mitzvahs, which is the Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Mikdash is saying. But ultimately, the purpose is to transform my entire life. And that everything about our life, even not non-mitzvah related issues, everything about the environment, everything about the world should be a place of Hashem's presence. And that will happen ultimately, that will take place in its perfection. We do it now as well, but its perfection will take place when Mashiach comes and the world will be filled with the Shekhinah. And that's when Hashem says, now the Yidden have done the Ratzin of Hashem, the will of Hashem, now this is my resting place forever. This is the place where I dwell in a permanent way. And those are the three opinions of the Zohar. All right, we'll stop there for today. Oh, what happened over here? Oh, I meant to stop shit. There we are. Oh. Okay, everyone, have a good day and a good week.